This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 154. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name is David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Berners and Mark Garraway. Well, welcome along to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Hello, Berners. Hello, Garraz.
All right, Coach, how are you?
I'm bearing up under the strain of all, but Berners, you're joining us from distant lands today.
I am.
Is that right? Yeah, where are you?
I'm in the midst of a sandstorm. There's a little bit of oil seeping up on a good length, and I'm at the World Cricket Academy in Dubai.
And that's for the ICC qualifiers?
Yeah, that is. So I'm just watching Oman against Nepal at the moment out the window here, and they're vying for, I think, 13th and 14th place, respectively. few mixed bags in terms of players in the teams. They've come in from, as you could imagine, grandmas, great aunties, uncles, and I think one or two of them are just literally here for a good time. But yeah, it's been quite a good standard in the facilities here, as I'm sure everyone's aware, are second to none.
Garraz, you know Geraint Jones, who's out there for Papua New Guinea, don't you?
Yeah, very well, yeah. I know quite a lot of the players out there having been involved in the Associate Cricket for a couple of years with Ireland as well, who have had a bit of an up-and-down tournament. I saw they'd lost to Namibia early on in the competition, but as Berners has just said, they're going to go and have a punt at the getting to the World 2020 stuff in September, which will be good, and fingers crossed for them.
You know, some of these guys have played at the professional level. They bring those traits and those things into this kind of environment, which other guys bounce off of. So it can only be good. I mean, it's what the game needs and what some of these guys need, you know?
Yeah, it's a way to get associate cricket up. And, you know, it's open to a little bit of abuse. I'll be brutally honest on that one. And during the time that I was lucky enough to be involved with Ireland, I think we had, the game we played England, we had 10 Irishmen in the setup, you know, in the team, which was a very proud moment, obviously, for everybody involved in Irish cricket. They've got a few more now, I think, playing in their side. But you know, the likes of Trent Johnson, Alex Cusack, Andre Botha, over the years, have made huge difference to Irish cricket because they've brought in those professional attitudes, which, you know, the younger guys, the William Porterfields, the Gary Wilsons, and Niall O'Briens, have all fed off and grown as cricketers.
And speaking of professionalism and leaving no stone unturned and all that kind of thing, I was looking this week at some of the games in the Asia Cup, which has been quite an interesting tournament, even though it suffers from not being the World Cup. But it's an interesting tournament nonetheless. And one thing I sort of came across, which is a statistic that's been around for a little while now, but one thing I came across during that tournament that I was specifically looking at, was this statistic, which is a chance of winning, which is just a percentage chance of winning for either side at any particular point in the game, which I suppose is the statistical version of when you're playing a game of cricket and you think to yourself, right, who's winning at any given time? And, I mean, instinctively, if you play cricket, you've played a decent amount of cricket, instinctively, you kind of know who's ahead in the game and who's behind at any given moment. So how important is being able to put an empirical measure on the chance of winning at any given moment and then being able to project that forward for what a side needs to do next?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. And I think it depends on the maturity and the understanding of the people around it. Stats are only as good as how you interpret them and then how you act upon them. There's different levels of that. But I'm sure in the way that the world's going and the way that cricket's going that within 10 years or so, that kind of stat will be acted upon so much better than it is now. I think there's a few coaches and a few setups around the world that do it well, one of which being England, who do it incredibly well. I'd say in the main, it's largely irrelevant, and it's more of a feel at the moment, and probably more of a thing for spectators rather than it is for the players. But that will change in the same way as, you know, on-base percentage changed the way that people went about playing baseball over in America You know, that will happen over time, and I think our coaching setups and our playing awareness will increase over time, and that sort of stat will start to make a bit of an impact on cricket. But we do get a feel, don't we? Everybody knows sort of where we are. I think the interesting one that those stats really point out to you is how close it actually is when that game can be won and lost. And sometimes we're not aware that we're in that position of losing ground in a game, and we don't act upon it. Whereas, you know, it's easy to say if we're 70 runs behind, there's only four overs to go, it's easy to say, oh, right, we're behind in this game. But it's those finite moments when you're sort of four down, the run rate's gone to seven, you lose a wicket, then all of a sudden the game changes massively in that split moment. And if you knew and understood about that, you might be able to play a bit differently.
And it's always been the case that a good captain is thinking ahead of the game anyway, and thinking, you know, what's the game going to be like in five overs time, in 10 overs time, and what's it like now? Which, having done a little bit of club captaincy, I know how exhausting that can be, trying to keep on top of the game as it's happening, and then also trying to project forward at the same time and thinking, okay, what's it going to be like if a wicket falls? How do we need to change things? So, do those statistics help clarify the mind, or are they still a little bit too early in development to be anything meaningful?
I don't think the statistics are too early in development. I think we are.
Right, the reading of
we're not used to it yet, and it's not become part of cricketing folklore and culture. In the same way as, you know, lots of things that have developed over the last few years have become part of cricketing folklore, culture, and behaviours. I'm sure that those types of statistics will in time do it. So the stats won't change. You know, the formulas will only get tweaked very slightly. I think the most fundamental change will be in the way that we start to look and approach statistics. That's the biggest shift that needs to happen.
But as if you've seen these chance of winning graphs, they have them on the telly now and again, but mainly they're on kind of websites that just sort of maintain a live thing going on while international's happening. Have you seen those, and what do you think of those?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're useful because they, especially if you've not got, you know, a bedrock of knowledge in the game, it gives you a kind of feeling as to where, you know, people often say in cricket, don't they, oh, we're winning or we're losing, which is one hell of an assumption, as we all know, because as Gareth said earlier on, the game scenario can change pretty quickly with a drop of a wicket or whatever. So it is useful, I think. And having that knowledge as well from a kind of playing side of things allows people to kind of project. And I guess a lot of the analysis side of things is based on assumptions and game positions and what inevitably is going to happen. So it's probably helpful, yeah.
I think the one that is people are more familiar with is Duckworth Lewis, which, you know, is taken over thousands and thousands of innings, just as these new stats are. But it tells you where you are in a game at any given point. One of the things that England did particularly well around 2002 to 2005, when their one-day cricket did get better, was they used Duckworth Lewis to chase down totals. But again, it's the maturity of the user rather than the statistics that will be the difference over the next 10 years.
Here's one for you. There was a game here the other day. Scotland were playing, and they were chasing 30 off of the last three overs. So they've got full-blown professional scoreboard, rates required and existing rates. Scoreboard goes off, electronic failure. So you've got both captains out in the middle scratching their heads. Both batsmen's concentration has probably now gone as well, because they're probably trying to not only think about where the gaps are in the field, but trying to think of, hang on a minute, where are we now? That's three we've just scored. That brings the rate down to such and such. So, you know, that was really interesting, because I was watching from the sidelines and I was thinking, well, I'm confused and I've got absolutely no purpose in this game whatsoever. It really doesn't bother me. But I was confused. I didn't know what the game scenario was. I was just thinking, what on earth is going through the players' minds? Now, either the captain's a mathematical genius and he's picked it all up as the board's gone off. The batsman, I guess you just try and keep scoring and hope that you're going to get knowledge eventually of what the scores come down to. I mean, what do you guys think on that?
Well, when it comes down to those sort of numbers that you're talking about, what was it, 30 off three?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would never talk in terms of overs. I'd always talk in terms of balls. So that's 30 off 18 to me. And any team I'm involved in will start talking about that. And to keep count of that as you're going down is very easy. to do. The second thing, any captain that goes out into the field without, that has the option to have Duckworth Lewis in his pocket and a sheet of Duckworth Lewis in his pocket should have it, because you know exactly where you are in any given game and any given ball by referring to that. So at that level, it's difficult to think clearly under pressure, I understand that, but if you've got your processes right, you should be able to not panic in those situations and work very much off runs versus balls, which, you know, is the way to do it. And that's a great message to go out to any club cricketers as well, rather than thinking in overs, thinking runs versus balls, because, you know, 30 off 18 doesn't sound that tough in the modern day that we're in, whereas 30 off 3, 10 and over, bloody hell, you know, that sounds a bit of an onerous task, but actually when you do it in balls, it's not. And secondly, if you have Duckworth Lewis available to you as a captain, get a sheet in your pocket.
I was going to say, when you're a little bit light upstairs like myself, I often struggle with the mental arithmetic side of things and try to just hit everything for 6 and get it all over and done with.
That's always a good way, mate, because if you stick 4 sixes over the boundary open, it means you've only got to tap a couple of singles. That would work for me in a 30. I'd take your approach if you could do it every time.
Well, of course, and of course, playing club cricket, I've played many a game where there's not even a scoreboard to start with, let alone an electronic one that goes off. And people are shouting out, you need 27.
But, you know, if it's 27 off 18, then you know where you are. So if nothing else comes out of this conversation, the people that should listen will start thinking balls. When it comes down to, I'd say anything under 10 overs, and you see even the television go to it, don't they now? You know, they have 117 off 120 balls or whatever. But as soon as you get down to 10 overs, you should be thinking in balls, not overs. It certainly helps in the run chase.
Interview time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and this week we're going to be talking about sunglasses. I think sometimes if you live in the UK, you never need them, but there are times when you do need sunglasses. And so I'm talking today to an optician who is an independent optician with Airedale Opticians. His name is Mohammed Hafiji. Welcome to the show, Mohammed.
Hiya, welcome. Thank you for having me.
So my first question really would be, why does somebody need to wear a pair of sunglasses when they're playing cricket?
Well, I suppose the obvious point really is protection. So, you know, things hitting you. So a lot of these sunglasses have offered a lot of protection now. They're toughened polycarbonate lenses, so impact protection. Other obvious reasons to wear sunglasses, they enhance images, so you can get enhancing filters, they reduce glare from the sun, so you're able to see the ball a lot easier.
Do you get any distortion when you're wearing sunglasses compared to the naked eye?
I suppose you are looking through a lens, so you are, you know, I suppose when you're looking through something, it's not as good as your natural sight. But a lot of the new sunglasses, ones that are correcting for distortion when they wrap around, they are very true now. So, you know, paying extra for better designs does make a difference. So things like Oakley sunglasses have got XYZ technology where looking away from the centre of the lens, you get less distortion. And a lot of the good makes have that built in. So in the old days, if you like, there used to be inherent distortions when they used to wrap around the frames. But now with technology, the distortions are a lot less and the images are a lot truer. And because you've got the filter in there to enhance your vision as well, it does make a bigger difference. So, the new sunglasses are actually a lot better than they used to be.
So it's not just a matter of style. There is a difference between a pair of sunglasses which cost £100 plus and a pair of sunglasses which cost £20.
Yes, absolutely. The one that do cost £100 plus, yeah, I suppose you are paying in part for name. It's, you know, most designer firms do have, right, have that built in. But there's a lot of technology that goes into the design as well. So, again, going back to Oakley sunglasses, the frame is designed in conjunction with the lens. So as something hits the frame or the sunglasses, they all sort of work in unison to protect the eyes. Same with Adidas frames, Adidas sunglasses, and other makes. They all sort of have a lot of technology in there to protect So the face, the eyes, you know, it does make a bigger difference.
There was a myth once that was posted onto the pitchvision.com website that if you wear sunglasses, it stops you, it increases your chance of getting sunburn because the amount of sunlight reaching the eyes fools the brain into thinking that it's not sunny, so it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. Is there any truth in that, or is that a myth?
No, not at all. All sunglasses sold in the UK, or in Europe in fact, have CE markings, and they all have UV, they all have to adhere to stringent guidelines where they have to protect against UV light. So they're all UV 400, so it's like Sun Factor, they all have to have that built in. It's illegal to sell sunglasses that don't have that. If anything, buying cheap sunglasses from abroad, so away from Europe, if they don't have the CE marking on, they're the ones that usually do damage because they don't have the UV 400 protection. So you're actually making the pupils bigger by wearing sunglasses, and you're actually letting more of the harmful rays in. So in the UK, you know, they all have sort of stringent guidelines to follow. So you get more protection. It's like wearing sun cream for your eyes, you know, it gives you a lot of protection, so you're less likely to get cataracts and other eye diseases. So there are actually a lot of health benefits to wearing sunglasses.
So let's talk about specific makes and models. You've mentioned Oakley a couple of times. So assuming somebody's got a bit of a budget to spend, is Oakley the brand that you go for? And if so, what is there a particular style of Oakley which is better than another?
Well, I mean, bigger is usually better with sunglasses. And a lot of cricketers or in sports in general tend to prefer the Oakley Radar or the sort of the big wraparound sunglasses. So there's the cyclists that prefer the Jawbone, which are lenses that you can clip in and out and change quite easily. The Radar, you can get different sizes, so there's different, you know, if you're quite small, then you can get a smaller type of wraparound frame. They're the popular ones. Other Oakley ones that are popular are the Flak Jacket, so they're the interchangeable lenses as well. So most Oakley sports glasses have interchangeable lenses. So if you're in different environments, if it's slightly overcast, or if you're playing at night in cricket, then you can have different filters put in to enhance enhance your vision. So at night they can have yellow filters, which have clarity, the contrast, so you're able to see the ball a lot quicker. So they're the ones that are quite popular. And they're the ones that we tend to sort of sell quite a lot to sports and sports enthusiasts, really. So cyclists, you know, are common, and cricketers, yeah.
But in terms of the different style, that's just a matter of taste, really. As far as you're concerned, you know, from a professional point of view, it doesn't matter if it's an M frame or a flak jacket. They're all doing a similar job. It's just a matter.
Yeah, they all offer the same protection. They all have different coloured lenses, so you get different combinations. So speaking to your optician or your sunglass specialist, they'll tell you which, you know, depending on the sport that you're doing and when, at what time of day you're doing it, they'll recommend different types of lenses. Most will come in sort of all, you know, most frames, so the flak jacket and everything, will have different lens combinations as well. So it's sort of fitting combination, you know, with what sport you're performing, but also the fit. So the fit's quite important. And Oakley have a three-point fit technology where they try and fit the bridge of your nose and then above your ears, so that so you're minimising if anything does hit you, the impact on the face. So the impact is taken up by the glasses and not necessarily by your face or your eyes.
And what if someone hasn't got a lot of money to spend? Perhaps, you know, they're thinking, well, you know, I like the idea of protecting my eyes, but I can't really afford to splash out on a pair of Oakleys. Is there still a benefit in buying a cheaper pair? And if there is there a particular brand that you recommend which you don't compromise too much on the quality to get the benefits?
Yeah, I mean, Oakley is sort of the premium end, and there are many other manufacturers. You know, there's Bolle, there's Uvex, there's a lot of sport-specific glasses which opticians do sell as well, from a company called Inland and Norville as well, and you know they are considerably cheaper. So you are paying a lot for the tech that goes into Oakley, and it is sort of high-end tech. So if you're, you know, professionals, then you know that's what they prefer, sort of their high-end technology. But you know, just general sports enthusiasts, you know, general cycling, all sunglasses sort of have the CE marking, so you know, the protection is there. They'll all have different types of lenses. So this is talking about the toughness of the lens. Some are just standard plastic lenses. Others have what are called polycarbonate lenses, which are a lot tougher. And as I say, Bolle and Uvex have been around for many years, and they offer a similar protection. So yeah, they was good. So it depends how techy you want to go with your sunglasses. Wear.
And how much are you compromising on quality for paying less money? Is it a big compromise?
Is it a big compromise? I mean, in protection, you know, Oakley do what's called a drop ball test and a spike test, where you know their glass, their lenses are usually 5 times tougher than the standards require them to be. So they are very, very sort of high end, very premium end. But then if all you're going to do with these sunglasses is wear them, you know, for half an hour cycling or an hour cycling, do you really need that protection? But then, you know, if there is an instance where, you know, you're at danger of something hitting you, if, you know, you're falling off your bike or an accident, then having that extra bit of protection, you know, can save your vision. So yeah, within reason, you know, if you are on a limited budget, then as long as you'd be able to get something like offer you a level of protection and not wearing any sunglasses at all, then that's better than, you know, waiting and saving or trying to save for a high-end pair of sunglasses.
Well, that's fantastic, Mahabha. Well, thank you very much for coming on to the show. That's a fascinating insight into the world of sunglasses, and I think hopefully we've encouraged some people to get the right type of sunglasses for their needs. So if anyone wants to know more information about Airedale Opticians, they can head over to airedaleopticians.co.uk, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So thanks very much for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Time now for us to answer your questions in the mailbag, in the questions section. And every week, the two questions that are read out get a chance to win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So you can send your questions in to do that, and we'll tell you how to do that towards the end of the show. But Berners, you have the questions for this week, a couple of interesting ones. So what's the first one out of the mailbag?
We do. First one's quite technical, actually. It's coming from Brendan, and he's got a 12-year-old son who visits a consultant chiropractor who is an expert in functional neurology. And last night he was aghast at how a midway bowling action is causing so many functional body problems, and strongly suggested a front-on action for his young son. So whilst he's taking his comments on board, naturally, he was also interested in the thoughts of our expert panel. So over to you guys.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to that chap to find out where he's coming from, because I've never had much experience with osteopathy or anything like that, so it'd be interesting to see with a fresh pair of eyes what he sees as the problem there. Because in my head, yes, there are certain things which are fundamentally difficult with the bowling action, which you're never going to get away from. For example, you only ever bowl with your right arm or your left arm, so it's by nature a unilateral activity, so you're going to have certain things which the body is not really designed to do just right-handed activities all the time or just left-handed activities all the time. So there's things like that which are difficult, but that's going to be the same for whether you're front on, midway, or side on. And as far as I can think about it, from in terms of say the spine, protecting the spine, as long as you've got that, you know, avoiding that that dreaded phrase, the mixed action, where you have your hips and your shoulders too far out of alignment, then you're not going to have any major functional neurological problems, as far as I can see. So I'd definitely like to talk to him and find out what his angle is. What do you think, Gareth?
Well, I completely agree with everything you just said. There's a lot of... It's a brilliant question, and there's a lot of questions that then come off of the back of it. I would say exactly what you said. It's all about alignment, and it doesn't matter whether you're side on, front on, or midway. As long as your hips, shoulders, and feet are aligned at the key points of a bowling action, which is back foot contact into front foot contact at release, then you can't go too far wrong. And there's significant research which backs that up. Obviously, then there's some strength and conditioning stuff, particularly around the transversus abdominis, which grips around the spine, which will help you in that. So I don't believe that there's one action which is better than the other. or at least I haven't had that proven to me yet, because all the research suggests that as long as you're aligned at those key points, then you're going to go all right, and you're less likely to suffer injury. As you say, fast bowling is tough yards, you know, and it requires a heck of a lot of training, and it is very, very hard on the body because it is a very unnatural thing for the body to do. So I completely agree with you. The research out there does not suggest, as yet, I'm not saying it won't in a few years' time, because that's how research operates, that the front-on action is better than the midway bowling action. The crucial thing is to get some video analysis, to get some super slow motion stuff, to see where this young man is. The other question I'd have for the osteopath or the chiropractor is, what's his field of data? You know, how significant is his field of data? Is it based upon 3 or 4 instances? Is it based upon 1,000 instances? Because obviously we can get quite extreme views or quite extreme data reports based on small fields of data. So that's the other thing. And I know that there's a lot of body of evidence that's being done by various sports institutes around the world to check this out, that are based on thousands of bowlers as opposed to a small few. So I'd be interested in asking that question as well.
Next question's from Aditya, and he's asking whether it's possible to play cricket and baseball at the same time. Obviously, both got a lot of synergies in the way the dynamics of the games work. He wants to know if he plays too much baseball, will he forget all about cricket? He also wants to play tennis. He sounds like a bit of an all-rounder, so just wants to know how that might work out.
Well, I'm in the business of keeping people active, so if he wants to play all three, go for your life, kiddo. And as you say, quite rightly, David, and Berners, there's some synergy between these activities. So baseball, obviously you've got fantastic opportunity to master your throwing technique, and it's something that I'm doing a lot of at school at the moment, is really looking at the throwing technique and applying some baseball principles into to take the pressure off of the throwing shoulder and spreading it across the body, across the whole throwing system. So that's fantastic. Eye hand coordination, smacking it out of the park, you know, you name it. There's plenty of synergy between baseball and that. Will you forget about cricket? Well, that pretty much was down to which one you end up liking the most, because inevitably we play lots of sports when we're young, and then we go to the ones that we enjoy the most, and that's what sport's about ultimately. There's only X amount of players that can earn a living from playing it, but there's millions of people, billions of people around the world that have a great time doing it. My first and foremost thing as a coach is to encourage people to be active, you know, and if they stay in my sport, which is cricket, then fantastic. But ultimately, you're trying to teach people lifestyle things that are going to help them to fulfill whatever they want to do in their lives.
I think the nice bit about those three sports as well, they all require your hands, they all require your head, they all require your feet, yeah. And they all certainly require a terrific eye. So I don't think there's going to be anything fundamentally wrong with doing all three.
No, crack on, I reckon.
Time now for the soapbox, and every week a member of the team gets the chance to rant for a minute about whatever topic they like, as long as it's related to cricket or cricket coaching. So this week it's Gareth. Over to you, Mark, for your 60 seconds.
Well, I'm going to talk about rain this week, and I'm looking out of my window and it's actually blue sky and sunshine, but I'm sure at some point over the next few weeks, as we go into the first throes of the season, we're going to get a bit of rain. And the thing that annoys me about rain isn't the fact that it rains and it stops you from playing, but that everybody turns off and just sits around, reads newspapers and all of that. And to me, the rain breaks give you a fantastic opportunity as a coach to reiterate some of the things that you've been working on, to talk about the game that's just happened, that's just been curtailed, to put some strategies into place for players to go off and do some stretching, for other guys to go and do some throwing mechanic stuff, chucking balls in between mitts. There are so many opportunities when that rain break comes for people to do some work, and they're not often taken. And I think that's down to us coaches to create a culture where rain means that it gives us an opportunity to get closer to our players, as opposed to just sit there and watch the rain fall and eat cakes.
That's the end of this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. But before we go, we have the job to do of picking a winner of the competition. As you know, the best question of the week gets a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had Brendan's question this week regarding osteopathy and the bowling action. And we also had Adita's question about playing multiple sports. So Gareth, which one do you think is best?
I like the first question because it was very technical and it involved some external practitioners as well, in the chiropractor, osteopath. And I think we discussed it pretty well. So I'm going to go with Brendan's question this week.
Excellent. And if you want to send in your question, you can do so. And the ways that you can do that are many and various. So Mark, what are the ways that people can get in touch with us?
By phone, it's 0208 816 7691. Or by email, it's coach@pitchvision.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. We're always chatting about something on there. And our Pitch Vision Academy Facebook page is facebook.com/Pitch Vision Academy. So you can catch us on there. If you want to subscribe to the show, and why wouldn't you? Then you can head over to iTunes and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us as the first result there, and you can just click on subscribe. If you want to subscribe without using iTunes, you could head over to pitchvision.com/academy, find the section on podcasts, and you'll see a link to the feed, the RSS feed, which you can plug into anything that takes RSS. That's all for this week, so until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Bernard.
Cheers, mate. Take care.